I'm very happy to begin our program this evening with an old friend who does very important work, and that's Chip Raley. And Chip Raley is co-author of the book Right-Wing Populism in America. He's written scores of scholarly and popular articles on human rights, fascism, and right-wing movements. And he served as a researcher with Political Research Associates for 3 decades. And he's the creator of a new website called Trumpism.us, which we'll certainly talk about. Chip Raley, thank you so much for being here tonight.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
So you've written some great recent articles about the Trump effect, Trumpism, or whatever we're going to call it here. One article is titled "Trump, an apocalyptic messenger for the Christian right," and another in-depth article titled Trumping Democracy, Right-Wing Populism, Fascism, and the Case for Action, all within the last couple of days. You told me you didn't get much sleep over the last few days writing these important pieces. Well, Chip, maybe as we begin, I would like to get your overview. There's many angles to pursue here, but what's your overview of Donald Trump's presidential candidacy and his overt calls of racism targeting both Mexicans and Muslims and lots of other folks are in the crosshairs of the scapegoat express? But tell us what you think about his candidacy overall.
Well, it's pretty horrifying that the American political scene is such that it took weeks of him talking in this bigoted manner for the mainstream corporate press to actually catch on and say, oh, wait a minute, this could lead to bad things. So I call him a right-wing populist. I have colleagues and friends who call him a neo-fascist. The issue is interesting for terminological debates among scholars, and you can find them online. The point is that when you have this kind of rhetoric, people get hurt, people get killed, and it's really up to all of us to stand up and organize locally to protect our neighbors.
Well, what's more scary than Trump and his rhetoric are his supporters, who seem to feed off the scapegoatism and the calls for hating Muslim Americans, hating Latinos, Mexicans in particular. And one of the things that you've explored, of course, is what's feeding this anger among mostly Republicans here in this country that have led them to embrace Donald Trump.
Well, they're white Republicans for the most part, and they're feeling that they've been dispossessed or displaced by people who don't deserve to be real Americans. In their mind, these new immigrants into our country are not deserving. They're part of a lazy or sinful or subversive phalanx of immigrants invading the United States. Now, obviously, this is a racist construct, but it's put together in a way by Trump that really excites a kind of need for vengeance. And that's really rooted in several things. One is that for most middle class and working class Americans, the American dream has been stomped on by the 1%. And instead of blaming them, they blame people below them on the economic and social ladder. And so you have a mass movement built around defending what Arlie Hochschild calls, she's a brilliant sociologist, they've lost their honor, and the only way they think they can redeem it is by forging a kind of alliance of white people to regain their lost power and privilege.
And could not this dissatisfaction and anger, the frustration of many people who maybe were formerly in the middle class and now seeing their hopes and dreams dashed by an economy that rewards the very rich and little else going to those in the lower classes. Could not those people be led to a candidacy such as Bernie Sanders, who really targets some of the essential reasons why our economy is serving the super wealthy and not the rest of the country?
Well, flip a coin. The more progressives organize around either Bernie Sanders or any kind of local progressive defense mechanism to protect those people under attack, I think his candidacy will look more and more like a solution. But really so much now on the left that local organizing, grassroots organizing, is not favored. The Democratic Party, after the McGovern campaign, gave up grassroots organizing. So did a lot of other liberal organizations. And you have groups like the Democracy Alliance that raised tens of millions of dollars to do what the right did to organize. But instead, they squandered most of their money and most of their donors' money on building kind of inside the beltway toy machines of the Democratic Party rather than investing in a long-term grassroots strategy. So it's really, it's a problem. And for me, the solution here is to not focus on electoral politics, but build, you know, kinds of coalitions that cross bridges and protect the people in your local community who are under attack and build broader coalitions that are multi-issue, multi-racial, multi-generational. And that's how social movements succeed. You know, this, I'll be honest, is not a time to send checks to inside the beltway spin doctors. This is a time to get off your ass and go out there and talk to people on the supermarket checkout line, on the bus, on, you know, any kind of situation where you can say, well, what about what's going on? And then listen and then have a conversation about how to make things better.
One thing that I encountered at a recent party, and I'm talking with friends who are maybe share my progressive views, is that they're shocked by some of their friends and family members who are really drawn to Trump and his candidacy and his appeal to hate and fear. And, you know, some of my friends are, you know, confronting it head on by saying, well, what are you, you know, trying to really question why people are drawn to Trump and support his candidacy. But I think what you're saying is that that really has to happen in a very organized way.
Well, absolutely. And it turns out, of course, that saying, well, your facts are wrong, doesn't work. The more you tell somebody that their ideas don't make any sense and can be factually, you know, disproven, the less they agree with you. So it turns out that really what matters is a conversation about what would make things better. And, you know, and so instead of saying, you know, I have, you know, 10,000 pages of proof that what you're saying isn't true, you start up by saying, well, you know, do people deserve a decent wage? Should the minimum wage reflect what it really takes for a family to raise children? And then stop and listen for a while. And that's hard for people because we've been so taught by the inside the beltway, you know, fundraising to demonize the other that we've lost the ability to talk to our neighbors.
Well, Chip, how has the Republican Party reacted to Trump's new version of the dog whistle? For many years, the Republican Party has employed dog whistle politics, appealing to people's prejudices and fear of the other. Now that's been replaced by Donald Trump and what you might call his new bullhorn version of that same rhetoric that blatantly appeals to people's racism and hatred.
Right. Well, and the Republican Party now is built around dog whistles. It could be, you know, macho, phallocentric militarism. It can be anti-feminist, anti-abortion, anti-gay in the terms of the Christian right. You know, there are all kinds of things that go on. and I need to turn off my cell phone.
Go ahead.
Go away.
We're speaking with Chip Berlay.
Sorry.
And Chip. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I forgot to turn on my cell phone. I apologize to the listeners. So the Republican Party is in a real fix right now because at some point in the last 10 days, they realized that Donald Trump was potentially a demagogue who would take the party down in a terrible defeat. And so now they're trying to sort out who's going to be the candidate that can appeal to the two or three major constituencies of the Republican Party, which are the Christian right, the neoliberal free market quote-unquote fanatics, and the militarists. And right now what you're seeing is as Ben Carson sort of collapses in the polls, and his constituency was the Christian right. I've heard him speak for decades at Christian right conferences. He's a favorite, but he's sort of unraveled. But now you're seeing the Christian right vote is being split between Trump and Ted Cruz, which puts the Republican Party in a real kind of fix because Ted Cruz is the plaything of the Christian right.
And Chip, I wanted to ask you about the Christian right, as you talk about Trump and his supporters, the Christian right is prominent among them. You were at a recent Trump rally in New Hampshire where you ran into a lot of folks who are evangelical Christians who have a firm belief in the apocalypse and see President Barack Obama as the Antichrist, which is a belief shared by many Republicans, according to polls that you've cited. Tell us about the connection between Trump and the Christian fundamentalist belief in apocalypse.
Well, it's both Trump and Ted Cruz, and what they're really playing on is the idea that we're facing a confrontation between good and evil. There will be a battle between good and evil, and the outcome depends on people organizing against the Antichrist, which is a figure that is an interpretation, a particular obscure reading of the Book of Revelation in the Christian Bible. And it, in America, you know, more than 50% of Americans think that, you know, Armageddon and the apocalypse are things that could happen in their lifetime or are real future history. Now, that's pretty creepy because that's more than the number of Christian evangelicals in the U.S. So we're kind of looking at this idea that is spread into secular society that there comes a time when there has to be a battle between good and evil. And if evil wins, then, you know, pull the plug. But it means that you have to step up and really put on the accelerator towards what is good, which in this case is white Christian voters. And white people in America and white Christians. And the real battle now is between what's more important, white nationalism, that vote's going towards Trump, or Christian nationalism, that's going towards Cruz.
Well, you know, this may seem far-fetched, but you know, we have another group.
Isn't this election far-fetched?
Well, yeah, that goes with us.
Okay,
but I'm thinking about, we have this insane and, you know, often referred to, and I believe it is, a death cult, ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, whatever you want to call it out there in Iraq and Syria. They also have a belief in the apocalypse, and they believe the final battle is going to be played out in this small town in Syria, Bedek, I think it's called. But what are the connections here in the Abrahamic religions surrounding this view of the end of the world and the rising of a great leader and the saving of souls here?
Well, let's go back to the idea that the people of the book are Jews, Christians, and Muslims, because all of them are aggregates of each other, so that Muslims think Jesus is a prophet and Christians think Abraham is a prophet. All three religions have apocalyptic sectors in which basically Jerusalem is the end game. And so this town in Syria is where the black flags of Khorasan meet, and those are all the noble and militant Islamic forces who will then attack Jerusalem and reestablish the caliphate. So, and people say, well, you know, you interview these terrorists and they don't really know their religion, and that's true, but that's not the point. The people most motivated by these apocalyptic ideas are young people who don't know their own religion and are lured into believing that this is prophetic end time kind of battle in which you either be there or be square. Jews have within their religion a tiny group of Messianic Jews who also think the end game is in Jerusalem, where they have to rebuild the Third Temple of Solomon on what they call the Temple Mount, but which Islam calls Haram el-Sharif, which is the target of ISIS and ISIL and all of the Islamic State people. And, of course, Christians in the U.S. are sending millions of dollars a year to pay for Jews to take control of the Temple Mount from Muslims and establish the Third Temple of Solomon, and therefore the real Messiah will come. So all three religions have fanatics who are brutal and willing to create genocide in order to establish in their mind the fruition of their religion. And it's really freaky right now because all three religions are involved in the struggle. And in fact, one of the major battles between Palestinians and Israelis right now is sparked by a rumor that spread that Israelis were going to re-seize the Temple Mount, Haram el-Sharif, from the Muslims and kick them off the mountain. And since in their religion, they have to hold that mountain something for the end of time to come. That is what motivated the knife attacks recently.
Yeah. It's all pretty scary, religious beliefs leading to violence, as you led off our program talking about.
Right. Now, you know, I'm a liberation Christian, and Ruby Sales is one of my mentors, and she talks about all religions have a liberation wing and an empire wing. And so we need to be careful to understand that when we're talking about these movements in religion, and I understand that there are lots of people who are atheist or agnostic or think, you know, there is no God because she's dead. But the point is that it's not about the religion. It's about a fanatical rescripting of the prophecies of the religion, not shared by most people in those religions.
We're speaking with Chip Verlet, co-author of Right-Wing Populism in America. Chip has written scores of articles on human rights, fascism, and right-wing movements. And we're talking about several of Chip's recent articles analyzing Donald Trump and his supporters in the Republican Party. And Chip, I wanted to ask you about how you define Donald Trump. Is he, in your view, a fascist, a proto-fascist, a neo-fascist of any kind?
Well, I put it this way in one of my articles. We're all smelling the burning bodies. It doesn't matter what you call him. I call him a right-wing populist. I have scholars and friends who I really respect their views who call him a neo-fascist. I understand. I warn people not to quote the hoax Mussolini quote about corporatism is fascism because corporates are fascism. It's a hoax quote, and it's nothing Mussolini would ever have said. And the very heartfelt but incredibly wrong essay by Lawrence Britt. Look for Umberto Eco's essay. I'm about to tweak my website to lead to it. If you go to www.trumpism.us, it will, in about an hour, take you to a list of resources. It'll take you to an interesting place now. Be sure to click on the music video. But the problem is, there's a big discussion among academics about what the exact term is. It almost doesn't matter. Right-wing populism is a precursor to fascism and neo-fascism. Scholars going all the way back to the 50s have talked about the apocalyptic nature of fascism. We're going to keep arguing these terminologies. I'm on a little email list with about 20 scholars, but the fact is, doesn't matter. His rhetoric is creating a situation called scripted violence, in which people not directly connected to him are going out and hurting people, attacking mosques with spray paint and worse. This only ends badly, and the sooner we stop it, the better. So by all means, keep up the debate. It's fascinating. I'm learning a lot. But the point is, we got to organize to defend our neighbors who are under attack.
Well, Chip, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I want to ask you this question. What, in your view, has been the response of our U.S. news media, in particular Fox News, and also the GOP political establishment, Rance Priebus and those guys?
Well, it's horrifying. I mean, you know, these are the people who would have turned their head away in the Weimar Republic, which is one of the people I've interviewed is a scholar of the Weimar Republic who says, look, we know where this leads. And so these people in the Republican Party and on Fox News are continuing to walk down the road towards genocide. I know it's a harsh thing to say, but we know this history. We know the politics. We know the sociology. There's a wonderful group called Facing History and Ourselves that will explain point by point that this is where it starts. And Hannah Arendt and Eichmann in Jerusalem made it clear, we need to stand up and speak out against any form of oppression when we see it, because to do otherwise is to conciliate with evil.
And Chip, you began the program by driving home the point that people really need to get active, and that this can't be just kind of an armchair sport of, our regular politics, but people have to get off their duff and do something. And I'm just wondering, you've spoken a bit about this evening, but maybe as we close off this evening, I would ask you to reiterate them. What are the most important things our listeners can do to engage their friends, family, the community at large, in really examining what Trump is saying and holding his words and the words of his supporters to account for what they really mean in terms of racism and potential violence?
Get the courage to step forward and talk to people about this in a way that's not angry and not demonizing, but raises questions about what would an America we would all be proud of would look like. Right here in my town in Burlington, Massachusetts, our local mosque was defaced. And the local community and especially the religious leaders across every denomination organized a rally in front of the mosque saying Muslims are welcome in our town. Any attack on Muslims, on Mexicans, on gay people, on reproductive rights activists, on feminists, it doesn't matter who the target is. We have an obligation to physically involve ourselves in some defense of them in our local town.
Well, Chip, it's always great talking with you. It gives me inspiration, and I'm sure that's true for many of our listeners tonight, to think about the realities of U.S. politics these days, which is a pretty ugly situation. But leave our listeners with the websites again, your regular website, websites where they can find your articles, of which there are a couple, and the new website, which I'll mention here, as you did earlier, Trumpism.us.
Yeah, Trumpism.us in the next hour, because I'm just finishing dinner, will link to a giant collection of resources on a website that I run. So I'm, you know, why confuse people? www.trumpism.us, and if you have the time, click on the music video.
I did. It's a wonderful old tune from World War II era Germany, as I recall.
Well, I'll stop there.
All right. Well, Chip, we make light here, but it's a serious topic, and I know if people are serious about exploring the ramifications of Trump, his racism, and his candidacy, should read the articles we've been discussing tonight, which I'll mention again as we close here. But thanks so much. I appreciate you making time to be with us tonight.
Oh, you're an ally, and I very much appreciate you inviting me on again.
Appreciate it. And we'll talk again soon, I hope. Take care, Chip.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That's Chip Roulet, co-author of Right Wing Populism in America. He's written many, many articles and studies on human rights, fascism, and right-wing movements. And his two articles that I'll mention here before we go to some music is Trump, an Apocalyptic Messenger for the Christian Right, which I believe you can find on the website talktoaction.org. And the other article, sort of more in-depth articles titled Trumping Democracy, Right-Wing Populism, Fascism, and the Case for Action. That was just written a couple days ago. And you can find that at the Political Research Associates website, which is politicalresearch.org. Anyway, worth exploring, as well as the website I mentioned earlier, as Chip mentioned, Trumpism.us.